When our best fur friends leave our world, many of us are left wanting one last scritch, one last hug, one last walk together. One Last Network is a space for pet guardians to honor their pets in their senior years and to cope with the days leading up to and after their passing. Here's your host, Angela Schneider, founder of One Last Network and Big White Dog Photography in Spokane, Washington.
Hey, welcome back. Today, we're talking about a super cool research project. The Dog Aging Project is a groundbreaking initiative that seeks to unravel the mysteries of aging in dogs, and by extension, gain insights into the aging process in humans. Launched in 2018, this collaborative effort involves researchers from various institutions, including the University of Washington School of Medicine and Texas A&M University. The project is designed to be the most extensive study of canine aging, with the aim of improving the health and well-being of both dogs and humans. At the heart of the Dog Aging Project is a longitudinal study that follows the lives of thousands of dogs over several years. By collecting comprehensive data on various aspects of a dog's life, including genetics, lifestyle, and environment, researchers hope to identify factors that contribute to longevity and healthy aging. The ultimate goal is to develop interventions and treatments that can enhance the quality of life for both aging dogs and aging humans. One key aspect of the project is the inclusion of citizen scientists, dog owners who actively participate by providing information about their pets. This crowdsourced approach not only facilitates data collection on a massive scale, but also fosters a sense of community among dog owners who share a common interest in understanding and improving the aging process for their furry companions. Dr. Kate Illing, one of the research veterinarians with the project, and who hails from my favorite city in the whole wide world, Calgary, Alberta, joins us today to chat about the Dog Aging Project, and in particular, the research she's doing on rapamycin. Hi, good morning, Dr. Kate Illing. How are you today?
I'm doing very well, thank you. And yourself?
Yeah, I'm really good. I wish it would stop raining here, but it's the nature of November where I live.
It's completely the opposite here in Texas. We've been having some rainy days, but it's blue skies and warm most every day, at least by my standards.
A little bit jealous. I need to go out and get some hiking done with my dog. So tell us a little bit about who you are, and then we'll get stuck into the Dog Aging Project, which is why you're here.
Okay. Well, for a little bit about myself, I'm Dr. Kate Illing. I am an early career veterinarian. I graduated from the University of Saskatchewan. I spent my first year out of school doing a rotating internship in my hometown of Calgary, Alberta, which is a very, very beautiful place. And then after that, I decided I wanted to get a little bit more research experience. And I heard about the Dog Aging Project and was offered an opportunity here. So now I work in research and am helping with clinical studies and analyzing data here at the Dog Aging Project.
Now, I creeped you a little bit on LinkedIn and saw that you actually started in nanotechnology engineering.
Oh my goodness. That's really a sign to me that I need to update my LinkedIn. But yes.
Yes. And what drew you away from that and into animal science?
Yes. So in my previous life, I was in engineering. I decided, well, I found that in the day-to-day of engineering, especially sort of R&D focused engineering, I was doing a lot of work on the computer. I was doing a lot of work in labs. And a lot of my research were things that were very experimental that would take a lot of time to see results. And I found that I really miss people. I really miss having face-to-face contact. And I'm the sort of person who's motivated by working on things that are really applicable and being able to see the results of my work. And I found that medicine, both human and animal medicine, is an area that's honestly not that different from engineering, where I could use the same skills that had brought me to engineering, learning how a system works, how to study that system, how to manipulate that system, even though things in biology are a lot more squishy, a lot less cut and dry than the world of machines. But I spent a couple years doing some biology studying, and then I decided I wanted to do veterinary medicine because I find animals really, really fascinating. And there's a lot of things about animals that can help us learn about people. And so that's how I got into veterinary medicine.
Did you grow up around animals?
Same as a lot of other people. I grew up sort of outside the city in just really close to Calgary, Alberta. So we were surrounded by a lot of people's hobby farms and horse ranches. I grew up in a house with a really big yard. And we had several dogs growing up that made a pretty big impact on me. That's definitely some of my fondest memories, is just tearing around the yard with our boxer dog.
Oh, you have to say his name, his or her name, and tell us a good story about her, because that's what we're all about.
A good story. Okay. Let me think. His name is Joe. His name was Joey. He was a fawn-colored boxer. Classic boxer personality, very boisterous, very playful. He was very good at stealing things that he shouldn't get into. He would, if you were eating a piece of watermelon, or my little sister was eating a piece of watermelon, he would try to sneak up behind her and just very slowly open his mouth and steal it out of his hand. And a few years after he passed away, we were cleaning up the house, getting ready to move. We moved our electric piano from the corner, and we found a stash of soap, of bar soap, that he had been stealing and hiding there. Because that was one of his favorite things to do as well, was to eat and steal soap.
That's a great memory to have. Wow. Your face lit up when you started talking about that too.
Yeah, he was a really, really good dog. Cool. And that's definitely a fond memory.
So now, what is the Dog Aging Project, and how did you get attached to it?
Of course. So the Dog Aging Project is one of the largest research studies of dogs that is going on right now. It's what we call a community science project. So every single dog owner who decides to participate in our study is our data collector and our researcher, essentially. So we collect nominations from dogs all over across the United States. And our interested owners help us by filling out comprehensive surveys on their dogs at least once a year, that give us information on their health status, their preventative care and wellness measures, their environment, their lifestyle, their physical activity, and their behavior. And if we collect data on all of these individual dogs longitudinally, we hope that that'll give us a better picture and allow us to study the biological and environmental influences on healthy canine aging. The concept that we're most interested in at the Dog Aging Project is, in addition to lifespan, something that we call health span, which is the length of a animal's life that is free from disease. So healthy, good quality life. Our end goal is, in a nutshell, is to be able to maximize health span of dogs. So they're the length of their life where they're free of disease and living a good, happy quality of life.
Well, that's pretty cool, because if you can get dogs to live longer, we'll have to suffer through a lot less grief in our lives over them, won't we?
Yes, that's definitely part of our motivation, is none of us ever really feel like we get enough time with our dogs. So anything that we're able to find out that'll help us in that cause, help us to get more time with our loved ones, is I think, a pretty worthy pursuit.
Yeah. What kind of groundbreaking stuff have you witnessed coming out of the dog aging project so far?
Well, we're definitely in the early stages of our study, where the most powerful part of our study will be when we have multiple years from the same dog, so that we can track what we would say longitudinally the process of canine aging. And that'll give us sort of the strongest basis to infer causality and risk factors. But some of the stuff that we've been studying recently, we recently published a paper studying the development, reporting on the development of canine cognitive dysfunction. Not all people are aware, but just like people, dogs do get experience declines in their cognitive function as they age. And it follows a disease course and a pathogenesis that we believe is pretty similar to Alzheimer's disease in humans. So one of our survey instruments is designed to collect information on the cognitive well-being of our dogs. And one thing that we were able to find, just looking at the just looking at a sort of a cross-section of dogs who have high scores with that data, is that it seems to be associated with that canine cognitive dysfunction is associated with decreased physical activity. So that's raised the question for us, it is physical activity associated with preventing or slowing the progression of canine cognitive dysfunction? So it raises a research question that we'd like to design a better way to solve.
And what we learned through the study of canines apply to human health medicine? Because I don't think our systems are remarkably different.
That's another part of the philosophy of the dog aging project. There's a lot of similarities between dogs and people, and a lot of ways that what we learn might be applied to people. Like I already mentioned, that dogs age more rapidly than people, so we're able to study things a lot faster on a different time scale.
Sure.
We also know that dogs get a lot of the same diseases that people do. They experience cognitive decline, they can get diabetes, they can get cancer. And all of those things will happen in a faster time scale than in people. The other very important thing is that dogs share our environment. So if people are looking at the effects of pollution on health, or even things like sunlight or elevation or region in the country, those are all things that we can study in dogs as well to help us learn about people.
Bella is a member, and
Oh, fantastic. I'm very happy to talk to one of our DAPPAC members. You should have told me that at the beginning.
I haven't finished all of my surveys yet, but I wanted to dive in to make sure that I knew what it looked like from the inside. And the questions are super simple to answer, and it's really just about how you feed your dog and how you participate with your dog in life activities and how much activity she gets and that kind of stuff. So it's super easy to be a part of. Are there benefits to the individual dog owner to being a part of it and contributing?
A lot of people report that they feel a benefit from knowing that information on their dog is helping to advance science and helping to advance dog health. A lot of people also really enjoy the community aspect of our project. All DAPPAC members sort of have the opportunity to interact with others on our little internal social media forum called the Dog Park. Which I'm not sure whether or not you've had time to check out yet, Angela. Another thing is that, honestly, as any veterinarian or pet owner can tell you, is that a lot of people really love to talk about their dogs and to share their dogs' lives with us. And some people find that innately rewarding.
True story. I will talk about her more than I will talk about myself. So now you are personally involved with a really cool interventional study that we talked a bit about off camera. Fill us in on that.
Of course. So one of the ways that the Dog Aging Project is studying how to advance health span in dogs is with our only interventional trial. So while the rest of the Dog Aging Project is observational, we have one specific cohort of dogs that we've recruited to be part of a clinical trial of a new use of a medication. So the medication is called rapamycin. It's long been used in human patients to help prevent rejection of organ transplants. And some recent studies in laboratory mice have shown that rapamycin might be able to slow down some of the negative health effects that we see from aging. More splashy headlines might say things like rapamycin can slow the aging process or reverse aging. But what's been found in some laboratory mice is that it can improve muscle function, heart function, cognition, reduce the incidence of cancer, and a lot of other age-related diseases. So what we're looking at is that we're doing what's called a double-blinded placebo-controlled trial. For all of the dogs that are enrolled into our study, they receive a study medication that might either be rapamycin or a placebo, and they give it to their dog once a week. We follow up those dogs with how they're doing every month, and we examine them every 6 months. They get a full, either a neurological exam or an echocardiogram, as well as full blood work, a full physical exam, and we follow them up every 6 months for 3 years. For one of those 3 years, they'll be receiving the study medication once a week, and then for the remaining 2 years, we're just following them observationally with no study medication. So hopefully by the end of our project, we'll be able to, it'll be the first real large-scale clinical study of rapamycin as a quote-unquote anti-aging drug. And that might tell us a lot about what its potential in people, as well as its potential to improve the quality of lives of aging pets.
Wow. What are the safety precautions around that in knowing I'm putting my dog into an experimental situation and giving her an unknown drug?
Of course. So rapamycin, it's been used in people for many years. We're aware of how it works and some of the side effects. There's also already been a few pilot studies and previous research that's been done on rapamycin in dogs. So we're pretty aware of the most common side effects. In dogs, the most common side effects are things like GI upset. There's also been some reported cases of changes in blood work values, like having low platelets or high triglycerides, fatty acids in the blood, that have been reversible when they're taken off the medication. So those are the main things that we're looking out for. We also are following these dogs really closely with their owners every month. Partway through any study like this, we always analyze our data. Make sure that we're not seeing a really high amount of health events in one group of dogs versus another.
Do you have an ongoing intake of study participants, i.e. Do you need more?
Absolutely. We are pretty ravenous for triad participants. What we're looking for is dogs who are 7 years of age or older, who weigh between, 44 and 120 pounds. I had to convert to American units for a second there. and who are willing to come to a triad clinical site every 6 months. If anybody listening to this podcast happens to be interested, the best place to get information about it is at our website at dogagingproject.org. If you're interested in triad specifically, we have a new fast track program that can tell you whether or not you might qualify for advanced screening for triad. And that's just at dogagingproject.org/triad, T-R-I-A-D, triad.
And where are the clinical sites?
So the clinical sites are across the United States. We've been enrolling more and more sites this year. We've had a rapid expansion. We have sites in Los Angeles, in Washington, multiple sites in Texas, Illinois, Ohio, all over the US. So the best way to find out if you're close to a triad site is to take the assessment.
Are there any specific breeds or types of dogs that you're looking for?
We are looking for any medium to large breed dog. We have some size restrictions, and they have to be otherwise healthy dogs, but no breed restrictions. We're interested in any and all breeds. And of course, any dog that doesn't meet our inclusion criteria for triad is very welcome to join the larger dog aging project. We're looking for information on all dogs of any age, any breed, any sterilization status, and all across the United States. So every bit of data helps. We want our study to be as representative of dogs across the US as possible. So we want everybody.
I have a livestock guardian dog as a companion.
Does he work or
she works in guarding me and telling me what to do? She's very opinionated. She's my second one. I adopted my first one in a town that may sound familiar to you. It's Carstairs.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I found my first Maremma in Carstairs, Alberta, and I am now deeply in love with the entire breed because of him.
They're beautiful dogs.
They are. But they have a typical lifespan of 11 to 14, but the age span for medium to large dogs does vary across breeds. Do you see certain breeds who don't have that extended lifespan being a little more helpful to your research? I'm thinking Great Danes, Bernese Mountain Dogs, you know, the ones that are fairly susceptible to early end of life.
So with respect to the Dog Aging Project's mission as a whole, we are interested in all of those breeds. We're interested in every breed. Mm-hmm. The more information that we have on dogs that maybe leave us too soon versus dogs who live very exceptionally long, happy lives. All of that information is really helpful for our database. All of it is stuff that as we collect over time, we might be able to analyze risk factors. So there's no particular, we don't really discriminate between breeds. We just want as much information as possible. For the triad project in particular, we're just looking for dogs who are 7 years or older, who weigh between 44 and 120 pounds, and who are otherwise relatively healthy.
Yeah. Do you think that something like this will identify the causes around some of those breeds having shorter lifespans?
That's definitely something that we hope as we get more and more information. Once we get enough dogs enrolled, if we have enough dogs of a particular breed, that increases our chances of being able to have enough data on that breed to make some breed-specific conclusions. We also have one cohort of our dogs is having a genome sequencing study performed. We have researchers who are working on looking into the genetic factors that influence disease and aging. So things like information that might help us improve the health of specific breeds is definitely something that could be on the horizon as well.
And how do you balance individual anecdotal data with turning it into generalized findings for your research?
That's a really excellent question. And that is one of the things that we're working on validating every year. We have some sort of internal projects that are going on that we're slowly publishing data on about testing the validity of some of our survey instruments, comparing the information that dog owners give us with information that their veterinarians give us, or information that we take directly from their veterinary medical record for those owners who choose to share that with us. And so far, people are generally pretty good at reporting on their pet owner, on their dog's lives. We also find that people are relatively good at reporting on the activity of their dogs. It's one of the sort of core principles of our research model. And that's something that we're constantly working on validating and improving as well, because it's really important that any tool that we use has to be usable by everybody and accurate no matter who uses it. So it's a little bit of a different approach to data collection than a very controlled study inside a research institution.
Have you been surprised by any information you've gleaned so far?
Well, I would say that as a relatively early career vet who spent most of their life in referral institutions and specialty hospitals, I've been happy to see that a lot of dogs are healthier than I'm used to seeing. I found that's almost surprising. It's just like sometimes I feel like as vets we're biased towards thinking about all of the dogs out there who we see all the time who are living with chronic disease, but it seems like a very large proportion of the population lives a really healthy life, which is really, really awesome to hear.
That's actually kind of what other future initiatives does the Dog Aging Project have in store for us?
Well, we're still working on achieving full recruitment in Triad. We are thinking about unveiling some new cohorts that aren't quite my area. We have been working on developing some measurement tools for owners to be able to measure their dog's muscle mass and activity objectively at home. And we might be considering rolling those out to a larger population eventually. And those are a lot of things. We're sort of in the ramping up phase of Triad, trying to validate our tools, improve our tools, and enroll as many dogs into the study as we can.
What's it like personally to be a part of this project and see the potential, especially as far as extending dog lifespans and potentially human lifespans?
I think it's exciting. It's it's a perspective that I really appreciate, being able to learn about so many people's dogs and know that all this data that we're collecting is going to be helpful for people who study human aging as well. Sorry, I got a little bit sidetracked on the question.
What's it like to be involved and knowing that you could be a part of changing the world?
Well, I think it's fantastic. The Dog Aging Project has a lot of researchers, 70 plus researchers across the country. So it's really fantastic to be part of such a great community that's all has the same passions of loving our dogs and wanting to improve their lives.
And it's easy for people like me to get involved too, isn't it?
It is very easy to get involved. It's, again, I would say that the easiest way to get involved is to nominate your dog or enroll your dog. The only requirement is that you have a computer with an internet connection and you can be part of the world's largest studies on canine aging.
Yeah, it's just as simple as logging in and answering some questions about how your dog lives. I love it. Well, thank you so much.
Okay. Well, it was really, really nice to talk to you, Angela. Lovely to meet you.
Bella is proudly one of the subjects for the project, and I've gone through and answered all the questions around her life, her health, her activity level, and her living environment. She is, of course, a couch potato, companion Maremma sheepdog, but loves her hikes in the North Idaho mountains. She turns 10 in March, and I already feel myself stressing out about her time with me coming to an end. And as many of us know, we call that anticipatory grief. It seems a long time to exist like that, considering I got Shep, my first Maremma sheepdog, to 12 and a half years old. But anything could happen. She's already started to develop those icky lipomas, but her checkups and blood tests come back showing she's healthier than ever. The average lifespan for a Maremma sheepdog is 11 to 14. But imagine if we could extend that with the knowledge the researchers, like Kate, glean from their work at Dog Aging Project. Imagine if we could have our pets with us for longer than we expect them to be. Of course, no longer how long they're with us, no matter how long we extend their lives with scientific research, it will never be long enough. I'm Angela Schneider, owner of Big White Dog Photography in Spokane, Washington, and your host at One Last Network, signing off to go get some Bella snuggles. Listen to One Last Network on whichever podcast platform you prefer. We're on Spotify, Apple, and Amazon. Don't forget to hit follow or subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And if you have a friend who might be interested in our content, make sure you share us with them. Thanks for listening.